Welcome to the CMO Marketing Podcast, where we interview business owners, leaders, or marketing professionals to find out their lessons and stories for success.
So welcome to the CMO Marketing Podcast. My name is Simon Dell. I am the CEO of CMO. If you want to find out a little bit about us, check out our website, cemoh.com. We are the marketplace for marketing people. We basically find marketing people for businesses on short-term, medium-term, long-term contracts, and even permanent. So if you need a social media manager to a marketing strategist to a videographer to a graphic designer, we can find them for you. We have a huge amount of people all ready to go and can be starting next week. If you get a chance, please jump on to iTunes and rate this podcast and tell everybody about how wonderful it is, and give us 5 stars, and that would be awesome. And lastly, if you want to connect with me, my email is simon@cemoh.com. I'm on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, all over the place. TikTok. I'm on TikTok. I started posting more stuff.
I'm going to have to find out your TikTok address.
Yeah, don't do that. So without any more delay, let's jump in to chat to today's guest. It's a gentleman by the name of Sean Steele. I've been on his podcast, so this is retribution for him. He is the founder of a new business called Scale HQ. Welcome to the podcast, Sean. How are you?
Mate, I'm very well. And I do feel like, you know, the opportunity for retribution and payback is always sweet. It's always nice.
I think I swore a lot on yours, so I'm expecting some F-bombs from you.
That's perfect.
Listen, you are on, for any of those, that anybody that goes out and finds you on LinkedIn, you have a CV the kind of length of my arm with things that you've been involved with or you are involved with. But give us a little bit about the Sean Steele background since you I kind of think you went out on your own, and it looks like that sort of happened about 6-7 years ago. Is that about right?
I went out only 2 years ago.
Right, okay.
2 years ago, yeah. So really it was 17 years of working in sort of buying, building, transforming, scaling education businesses. As originally as an executive and then as a CEO and a group CEO, helping basically other people build and maximize the opportunity in education portfolios, which I love doing. And then 2 years ago, you know, probably the 5 years leading up to me starting to do my own thing was I had this awesome period where I got to buy other education businesses and then mentor those founders install our own management to develop growth strategy and execute it. And I just loved doing that. And so I thought, you know, when it felt time for me to wrap up that journey, which was just, you know, sort of just post COVID, I guess, you know, another sort of COVID baby, new business born. I've been doing my own thing for a couple of years, you know, refining all my own methodologies for scaling and putting all my frameworks together and stuff, supporting individual founders. But now in the last several months, I've been onboarding team, I've been building courses, I've been building a community model, which will launch later this year. And so I'm now really trying to build the hub that particularly founders in that 1 to 20 million space who really want to scale up from 7 figures to 8 figures will come to for advice, education and community. So that's where I'm at now.
Okay, so that's what Scale HQ is going to offer.
Correct.
Just sort of go into a little bit more detail there. So if you're a founder or you're a CEO, why would I be coming to Scale HQ?
Yeah, typically we work with first-time founders who, you know, usually haven't built a business bigger than the one that they're building today. And so if they're younger and they feel like they've maybe got a few businesses in them, they often appeal to the education offering. So they want to do courses, they want to learn, they want to apply it themselves. They don't necessarily want someone to tell them everything in how to do it. Founders who are maybe in their, who are like 45 to 60 and they're thinking, this is the last business I'm going to run. I want to make the absolute most, you know, impact I can have and create the most opportunity out of it. They don't want to make, you know, avoidable mistakes. They want somebody who's, you know, been wise, who's been there before, who's got runs on the board to help them, guide them through the process. So they tend to lean towards the advice category. So that's, you know, growth mentoring. So I mentor founders. I have other advisors who also mentor founders. We've got different skill sets. We also facilitate and chair advisory boards if they need multiple advisors to help them oversee their growth strategy. So that's kind of the advisory part. Education is all about courses. But the reason they do it really is they want to fulfill the potential of their business, but they haven't built a bigger one before, so they just don't know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to get someone who can kind of curate the learnings, share things that work, helps them see what's coming, and then help them knock over the problems kind of before they arise.
You must obviously see some recurring themes in the people that you speak to. Give me a couple of examples of those.
I would say number one, if I just think even about the last 12 months, everybody with a services business, maybe they don't, they may have multiple constraints to scale, but everybody's biggest problem has been people. Access to talent, who wants to work, who's motivated, who's skilled, and who doesn't want, you know, three times the salary that they had 2 years ago. You know, this, the number of stories and examples I can give of people who might have been on, you know, 100 grand 2 years ago who won 200 grand or 120, 170, and there's so much hopping around going on at the moment that people are just really struggling to find great people to help them, especially if they're in a growing business. That's number one recurring theme. Okay. Number two is usually around capital structures for scaling. So if there's a business that's going well, we don't tend to work with businesses that are broken. They're not businesses that need fixing. They're businesses usually that are actually going quite well and they're profitable, but they want to do more. And so their biggest issue is, I feel like if I just continue to go the way I'm going, it's going to take me forever to actually really fulfill the potential of the business. How do I think about, do I take on debt? Do I take on an equity partner? Do I bring in private equity? Like what's the model to help me free up cash flow to kind of take the business to the next level? That's another recurring thing.
I guess probably the other one would be mindset. I think mindset would be a challenge, is that some of them are, I mean, maybe scared is probably the wrong word, but cautious, or you must see some challenges around mindset in there.
I think what's a typical journey of a founder these days is actually they're starting businesses earlier, and often they haven't had much, like I spoke to a founder yesterday, a new client who's coming on board, started his business when he was 19, he's now 35, he's never done anything else. So he's had very little leadership development, he's had limited time for personal development, like he's just been grinding, hitting this business hard for what, like 15, 16 years. So he hasn't actually had the variety, the exposure to actually build his own capability that you might if you've gone up the corporate chain and then started a business later. The actual personal development of the founder and the personal effectiveness of a founder and the ability to have perspective is definitely a gap for lots of first-time founders, in particular if they started at young.
What about mistakes? Again, I'd imagine you sort of walk into a few places and there's a few things that slap you in the face and go, whoa, you shouldn't be doing this, or you know, the wrong approach. What do you see, you know, as those main mistakes that people make?
I would actually say, and I think there's heaps for us to talk about on this today, because obviously, you know, you talk a lot about marketing in this podcast. Probably the biggest mistake, and I've absolutely been a culprit of this, is, I don't know what the right analogy is, but it's like putting water on a fat fire, like, or as an electrical fire, whichever one you don't put water on, that's a bad idea, right? So trying to amplify with spend. Like if you think about, okay, what's the biggest challenge? Okay, let's assume that they've solved people and their business model already works. They've got product market fit, they've got people, it's working. How do they get the growth engine to grow? Well, the biggest problem is they get impatient and they want to throw a whole bunch of money at a marketing platform that's actually not very stable and it's not well designed and it's missing a whole bunch of ingredients. And so it's like the brick walls just got holes all through it. And now they're trying to add a roof and a truss and all this weight on top of it. And that's it's a fast way to waste money, which I have done many times. And so that's probably one of the areas that I think, you know, we could definitely share some learnings on today if it suits.
Yeah, look, absolutely. We'll come back to that in a second, because I think one of the interesting things that I've found just from my experience in the last sort of 18 months is that as the business sort of grows and as it sort of it starts seeing month on month growth that is good. You know, we were seeing consistent month on month growth, 7% month on month, and we're, you know, sitting there looking at it going, well, this is fantastic. But all the things that we'd done to get that growth suddenly became things that we were like, oh, I can't be asked doing that anymore. You know, you sort of go, you know, and I mean from a marketing perspective, not necessarily sales, not necessarily anywhere else in the business, but from a marketing perspective. So, you know, all those things that you'd lined up to sort of ignite that growth to start with, you suddenly go, I can't be bothered doing that, you know, and let's just cut this and cut this. And look, and you know, a good example is this, the podcast. I've only started doing this podcast again sort of last week. Haven't done a podcast for probably 15 months. We were sitting there going, well, why haven't we done it? And I sat there and going, well, intrinsically, I was either A, too busy, or because lots of other things were happening in the business, or B, too lazy, because just couldn't be bothered, you know. And there's a discipline that I think a lot of founders, especially ones that have been involved in the business for a long time, or at least involved in their industry for a long time, there's a discipline that suddenly goes out the window when there's a little bit of success. Do you see that?
I take a slightly different perspective to it. And this, one of my advisors, Brian, who's just this amazing tech guy, super experienced CEO, and great thinker. But one of the things he challenged me on is he said, what people don't give a lot of credence to is the fact that everything that you start requires maintenance. So whether it's an extra feature in your SaaS product or whether it's a new strategy, whether it's a podcast, whether it's a blog, whether it's a whatever, it's very easy to see lots of things to do and to start them, but then to forget there's actually a real cost. So to your point, there's discipline. So there's a cost in time. Someone's got to drive it. Someone's got to maintain it. Someone's got to make sure it's got quality. Someone's got to keep it going. And there's only so many of those things that you can take on. So we often start a whole bunch of stuff with not really a lot of consideration as to what the maintenance program, if you like, is going to be, and the maintenance cost and consumption of time in our businesses. So I think sometimes we've got to push ourselves a little harder earlier to go do the thinking about the maintenance cost before we actually make the decision in the first place. Think the other risk is, probably like yourself, founders get bored. Founders like changing things. Founders like the challenge of new things and new adventures and new products and new services. And so they can be a bit chaotic because they start a lot of things, but they're usually not great finishers. And if there's nobody there to pick it up and make sure it gets embedded or to push back on the founder and go, hey, you started 7 things in the last 3 weeks and we actually can't do all of those, which I'm absolutely, have been a previous culprit of being told that by my team in the past. Like, Sean, I do not need another idea from you. Like, stop with the ideas. Let's just do the things we've agreed. It is a challenge.
One of the other things on top of that is it's the maintenance. The maintenance is a great point you make. The other point that I see is where you are beholden to a standard of producing something that you don't necessarily have to maintain that standard or shouldn't have maintained that standard in the first place. And again, a good example is we did some TikTok videos, again, 12 months, 15 months ago, the greatest Australian brands. So a thing I'm quite passionate about, talking about success stories, Australian brand success stories. So Vegemite, Bunnings, Combank, F45, and my personal favourite one was Guzman and Gomez. We had an in-house videographer, I had someone working with me to write the scripts, we produced these glossy, fancy, wonderful little videos that went for 60 seconds or 90 seconds, and they were really quite high quality production output. That just wasn't sustainable. All of a sudden my videographer got an external job with a client for 3 or 4 weeks, and that takes him completely out of the loop, and we're like, well, who's going to do the editing now? And then you go, well, let's not do one till he gets back. And then all of a sudden we book a couple of Friday mornings where he's supposed to be here to video me, and I'm out of the office and I'm busy and things like that. And the next thing you know, 3 months have gone down the road and you just go, we haven't produced a video. And it's only because we're beholden to producing something of a certain quality because we think that we have to produce something of that certain quality. And I think it was a Steve Jobs quote that, real companies ship product or something like that. That comes down to the marketing as well. Is, I might have paraphrased him or completely misquoted him there, but there's a certain point where you just go, we've just got to get shit out there. We've just got to do some marketing. We've just got to reach out to people. And let's not really worry that it's 100% right. And let's be, if it's 80% there, let's do it. How do you your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's a real balancing act, isn't it? On the one hand, consistency is helpful. But on the flip, you've probably got a bunch of podcasts. Like, I've got podcasts that I guarantee you haven't published anything in two months. But when they do publish it again, I will absolutely jump back in. It'll come straight back into my listen now and I will listen to it. And I couldn't care less that it wasn't there every Wednesday because that's what they promised me. So I would rather, I feel like we're kind of in this situation where there's almost, we're really saturated with content right now, there's just content coming out our ears from every single possible channel. So I think it feels like there might be a bit of a shift towards less content and higher quality, more thoughtful, more insightful content. Like, I think about, a couple of the people that I follow on LinkedIn, and the ones that actually post quite infrequently, but every time it comes out, it's really it's deeply thought out. They've produced a framework, they've thought about it in detail, and you go, wow, this is actually really valuable. But they don't just post for the sake of being noticed all the time and having really light, ineffective. So I don't know what the perfect balance is, but I think it feels to me, and I could be wrong, but it feels to me like there's a little bit of a shift happening. We've all rushed to getting content rhythmic and just getting it out. And I feel like now people will care less, but they'll care more about quality going forward.
It's an interesting one because, again, I see many commentators always talk about consistency trumping creativity. And I think that's to a degree the social media algorithms talking.
Yes.
Whereas they're saying, look, if you are consistent in the production of your content, you know, and even Google's search engine algorithms and TikTok's video algorithms and YouTube's video algorithms and Facebook's content algorithms, they are looking for consistent posting. They are looking for consistent content that comes out repeatedly.
True.
So to your point, to someone who doesn't do something for 2 months and then does something, whilst you as a person are sitting there going, well, I appreciate that person, I appreciate their content, the algorithms themselves are going, where's this bloke been for 2 months? Yeah, let's not show it to many people because he can't be bothered to post.
Yeah.
So you've got this juxtaposition between what the algorithms want versus
is it a bit channel dependent then, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like if you've got an owned channel, like it's your database, then well, don't be sending out crap frequent stuff to your database. You're like, oh my god, I've got to move Simon's stuff on because he sends me something every 3 days and it's just so boring. But if it, to your point, if you're not getting any visibility and you're really trying to build awareness, then that could be a real issue, I guess. You know,
I lean towards the consistency side of things. Again, from having come from a marketing, well, obviously still being a marketing background, but also having come from an advertising background as well. Mm-hmm. Advertising was all about the big ideas, the big creative idea that was going to capture people's attention and really engage them and things like that. And you go, yeah, and you know, you and I would remember, you know, big famous ad campaigns and things like that that, you know, that had, you know, massive impact and recall and all those kind of things. The argument now is rather than waste your money spent with all these massive creative ideas, just consistently keep talking to your customer in a manner and, you know, about stuff that they want to talk to you about and stop trying to be this,
I reckon is the key, right, Simon? Yeah. I think, what is your content going to be about? If you're out there just kind of going, hey, look at me every, you know, every week, just because it's consistent isn't necessarily going to actually get any traction. Is your marketing actually helpful? And you know, if you've got a, if you've thought through, for example, the top 10 or 20 things that your customers, before they've ever heard of you, are actually typing into Google, like, how do I find myself a marketing consultant? How do I know if the digital market is any good or is telling me lies? Like, what are the questions they're asking? If your content is addressing those questions that allows people to self-help, I always think there's a real, I do find a lot of fear with founders, like, yeah, but if I kind of overhelp them, like, what, won't they then not come to me? It's like, it is absolutely the opposite. From every example that I've ever seen, you'll just get significantly more respect because you're willing to help people to help themselves. They go, oh, that person's an expert. They're willing to give value. They're going to be more trusted. And then I'm going to ask them for help anyway. Because just because you tell somebody how to do something doesn't mean they want to do it themselves, doesn't mean they don't want support, doesn't mean they don't want to be handheld through it. There's always opportunities. But I think if your content strategy, therefore, is solving real problems, then your consistency becomes really important because your content's already going to be of a decent quality.
I always remember the story of a lawyer who specialised with drink drive cases, and he would say Monday mornings, he was just inundated with phone calls and emails, people going, I've just been done over the weekend for drink driving, they're going to ban me for 3 months, I'm going to lose my licence, etc., etc., I need my car for work, blah, 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 blah. And he would spend Monday, Tuesday just fielding all these phone calls and all this, and just a massive time sink. And he was ranking quite well on Google because that's how they were all finding him. And on his website, he then decided to put all the, you know, the top 10 answers to all the questions that he was getting on the Monday morning. You know, how do I beat, what do I do? How do I beat this charge? What if I've been wrongly? Blah, 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 blah. So he put an FAQs. And what he found was that the Monday or Tuesday, the phone calls and the emails had just dropped. 90% of them just didn't bother calling him, right? But the 10% that did still call him were the 10% that still wanted him to help and do the work for him, which was the same amount of ones that he was originally dealing with when they were all calling through. Essentially what he did was clear all the tire kickers out, and these were the ones that were looking at the questions on his website were going, well, I can beat this myself and I don't really need a lawyer, and all they were doing was calling him for the advice, the free advice in the morning. So to your point exactly is, if you teach someone how to, you know, if you're a plumber and you create a video on how to change the washer on a tap, it doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to change the washer on the tap. I'm probably going to watch the video and go, fuck, that looks hard, I better call the plumber.
I can give you an example of that at scale that is, that scales right up to significant levels. So we purchased in a previous role, I was part of the team that purchased a group, a college that was enrolling about 4,000 students a year into bachelor's degrees.
Yeah.
and I won't give away which bachelor's degrees, it'll be very clear as to which business it is, but the point being, people were paying like $60,000 for a four-year degree in this college, so super high-ticket item, right? Mm-hmm. And most, you know, when you're trying to, and you think about the engine, right? Like, this is the big problem with sales and marketing. You, the more people you build, you feel like you need to feed the beast, and so you become more lead-hungry, and then the quality of the lead starts to deteriorate, you start getting less effective spend, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, we bought this college, and you're always trying to get your cost of acquisition down versus the value of the sale, right?
Yeah.
And I looked at their cost of acquisition, and I was like, we had eight other brands. This was our ninth brand. And they had the lowest cost of acquisition. They had the highest course value and the lowest cost of acquisition out of anyone, the least number of salespeople and the lowest cost of acquisition. I was like, what is going on here? So I had a look into it. And their marketing was just so self-help oriented. It was unbelievable. It was like, to your point, it got rid of every type. It was like every single bit of information you could possibly think of that student's going to want to know before they would apply had already been dealt with. And they were practically pushed, like, don't call us until you've read all this stuff. And then when you're finally ready to call us and you want to find out whether we think you're ready for us, then give us a call and we'll interview you, but not before. So it was like, don't waste my sales. So they had maybe, I had 70 people sitting in a contact center I'd built. They only had like 12 salespeople, and their cost of acquisition was so low. I just couldn't believe it, but that was why.
Yeah. How do you manage your day-to-day in terms of tech stack? You know, what do you use from a marketing perspective, sending out emails or, you know, posting on social? What's the go-to software for you?
Good question. Well, I'm in the process of rebuilding all of that at the moment, but I've kind of already chosen that. I've chosen the majority of that stack. There's been some major improvements to Kajabi, and Kajabi is fundamentally where the courses, you know, the courses live, which is, you know, good. Kajabi's funnel building system, marketing automation system. It's not the most advanced marketing automation system in the world, but it does the basics for a business of my size at the moment. So Monday.com essentially manages all of our workflow, all of our task management, all of our projects, all of our, you know, everything kind of, all of our collaboration happens in Monday. So it's like everything starts in Monday. Then there's integrations between Monday, Zapier and Kajabi. So, you know, data's moving to and from Zapier and Kajabi in terms of, you know, anything that hits the Kajabi, you know, landing pages goes back into Monday. Monday has got a sales CRM and a marketing module and a kind of task management, project management module. So it's the sales CRM, it's the marketing, you know, campaign management. Monday.com pushes out posts. It, you know, it's now got some scheduling capability. It's not as good, again, as some other third-party scheduling tools, but Monday, Kajabi, Xero are probably the biggest elements, and then a whole bunch of other third-party, but that's kind of the biggest part of the core. And Kajabi is also the back end of our website, so then we can manage the entire website on a Kajabi.
Okay. My last question, somebody who is going out on their own, who spent, I think you said something like 17 years working for other people, and then, you know, you've decided to sort of go out on your own and do your own thing. I think one of the things that's obviously, you know, quite impressed me about you was that the way that you've created your own profile, that you, that your own, you are to a degree your own marketing channel. So talking to people who are thinking of going out on their own or out on their own, but also people who are, you know, at the C-level thing where they're going, well, I don't just want to be the CEO of this company, I want to stand as a brand on my own right. A couple of ideas around things that they can do to sort of increase their value in the marketplace, as it were.
It's kind of almost back to marketing fundamentals, right? Like, especially if you've become quite senior, the more senior you get, quite often, depending on, unless you've gone up a very straight sort of functional stream, if you've become a general manager or a CEO or something like that, your actual skills become more and more broad as opposed to more and more deep, typically.
Yep.
And so that becomes a real problem for you then articulating what your value proposition is. So who is the person that I am absolutely, you know, you think back to my, what's your first question with a new client? It's like, well, let's talk about who's the customer you're serving? What's the ideal customer profile? What do they value? What are their problems? What are their pains? Like, what is the problem that you're able to solve? How does what you've done in the past, you know, kind of lead to you having credibility to be able to have that conversation? And that's actually one of the first places I see people go wrong, is they see a problem that they think they can solve, but they actually don't have credibility with those people. So it's like, you're kind of starting from scratch. It's like, don't throw away the last 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 years of experience that you've got, the networks and the credibility that you've got. Do not underestimate the value of being able to walk into a room or have a conversation with someone that you don't know and have immediate credibility. If you are trying to make a personal sort of brand transition, that is absolutely worth its weight in gold. So who are those people? What's the problem you're best able to solve? Get really clear about that sweet spot. And then think about, what is a style of content production that would help you get your thoughts out. Because if you get to that stage, you've got frameworks in your head, you've got methodologies in your head, you've got experiences. So you might love writing. Okay, we'll start, kick off everything with a blog, all right? I start with a blog, then I push back to the blog from LinkedIn or Facebook or wherever my market is. Maybe the podcast, if I do a podcast, then the podcast follows on from the blog. Like, think about what's the thing that you love doing. I like talking, so I start with a podcast. Podcast starts everything, and it kicks off a chain of everything else. But some people like writing, so start with the writing version, let everything else take it. But make sure there's one thing that you really enjoy doing that gives you energy. Because if I had to start with a blog, I would just have to, I'd be like, I wouldn't be in a good place because I just hate writing.
Yeah.
But I like talking.
But the interesting thing is, again, I've said to many, certainly technical founders, so you meet technical founders who are quite nerdy, you know, and they don't want to stand up in front of an audience. You know, you ask them to write a 600-word blog and it'll take them 3 weeks. And they're certainly not equipped to be doing podcasts or stuff like this. So sometimes they feel like very insular and isolated going, you know, I've got all this information in my head. One of my key things for people like that is to sit there and say, let somebody interview you in a face-to-face environment, in an office, not on a podcast or anything like that, and talk about a particular subject. And what we're going to do is that we're going to record that. We're going to record the audio of that. Then we're going to transcribe that, and then we're going to turn that into a long-form piece of content, you know, 2,000, 3,000 words.
An e-book,
you know,
or a guide or a white paper.
Whatever it might be, but about a very, very specific subject. And then we're going to do that once a month. And that's going to take you an hour. All you're going to do is sit in that room. Yes, it's going to take you a little bit of time just to edit it. Not even ask you to edit it. We're just going to get you to read it and make sure you're comfortable with the content that's in there.
Totally.
And all of a sudden they're like, well, I can do that. I can do an hour. Yeah. I can talk for... They're happy to talk. They love to talk. You know, if they wanted to, if someone asked them about their specialist subject,
you can't stop them.
No, exactly. So just tapping into finding the ways that people are better to get their ideas across. You know, I think that's a massive opportunity.
I think the other thing, so I think that's 100% true. And to your point, it's like, how do you find a way of just getting your thoughts out easily and then using those thoughts to turn it into, you know, a million other things? And so, you know, with the advent of ChatGPT, you could do that. If you like monologuing, okay, talk to your camera, get the transcript, clean up the transcript, send it through ChatGPT and go, okay, ChatGPT, you know, give me a blog version that's 1,000 words version of this. Give me a LinkedIn post that's, you know, I don't know, 150 character, whatever it is. You know, get it to do a little bit of the work for you and then refine it. It's not going to be perfect. Mm. But the other thing I was going to say was, because you touched on it there, what I see people almost like leapfrog the step of, if you think about what, if you're going to go out and build a personal brand, how do you codify? You know something that well enough that allows you to take people on a transformation journey in whatever it is, whether it's, you know, you're great at teaching them how to build an app, or you're great at teaching them how to get them, keep themselves out of jail, or, you know, whatever it is, because you're a legal founder or you're an HR person, whatever it is, you know something that allows people to go from like poor state, current state, to future state. What you've got to think about is, how do I codify that into some kind of a framework, a method, a process? Because until you do that, it's really hard to have a kind of core thing, whether it turns into a book, whether it's a video series, whether it's there's a million different ways of sharing that content, case studies and so on, but you've got to actually get your thinking concise, consolidated, practical, so that you can then build a whole bunch of stuff on top of it. Until you do that, it's actually, you end up just doing a lot of talking and you can't really synthesize it.
I'm working with some scientific technical founders of a business at the moment, and I keep saying to them, repeating over and over again, it's very easy to make things complicated. It takes a lot of work to make things simple.
Yeah.
And they keep talking in scientific terms, and I'm going, yes, but what does that mean to the consumer? What does that mean to someone where you have to explain this in 3 seconds, whereas you guys are taking 10 minutes to explain things? So, mate, look, it's been fantastic talking to you again. Thank you very much. And we obviously could have sat here probably for another hour. But for those that want to reach out to you, what's the best way of finding you out there on the internets?
Oh, thanks, Simon. Yeah, there's probably three ways, depending on kind of what they're interested in. If you've got someone listening who actually really wants to build a kick-ass growth strategy, I've just released like an 8-step checklist that helps you fast-track your growth and valuation by building a much better strategy for the next 3 to 5 years. They just go to seansteele.com.au/checklist. Second option, if they're more of a kind of reader, jump on LinkedIn, follow me on LinkedIn, and I've got a Scale Smart weekly thought piece. It takes less than 5 minutes to read, and it's like a practical, here's a scaling principle, here's an example of it, here's what to do with it, now go do something with it and implement it. And then finally, Scale Up's podcast, where you'll hear the beautiful Simon Dell on a previous episode, Apple, Spotify, YouTube, the usual places, and that's where I interview founders, aspiring founders, ones who've succeeded, experts on scaling, and then I do some sort of tutorials type stuff myself. That's it. Awesome.
Mate, thank you very much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks a million times.